from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, the California High-Speed Rail Authority now plans to build the first section of the new bullet train from the Central Valley to San Jose, rather than from Fresno to Burbank, as initially planned. The authority says the change will speed construction and save money, but rail supporters in Southern California, eager for the train to ease traffic, are upset that their region is neglected in the new plan. Ever since voters in 2008 approved nearly $10 billion in bonds for a high-speed train linking the northern and southern parts of the state, the project has faced political opposition, mounting cost estimates, and is facing a construction delay for 2 years. We'll talk about it next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. In 2008, California voters approved nearly $10 billion for a bullet train linking Northern and Southern California. The California High-Speed Rail Authority recently announced a plan to build the first 250-mile section from Kern County to San Jose, rather than from Fresno to Burbank. The new plan will be open to 60 days of public comment, and we want to discuss it and the future of the still controversial high-speed rail project in this morning's opening Forum Hour. And I want to go first to Jessica Calafati, who is the politics and state government reporter for the San Jose Mercury News. And Jessica, good to have you with us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you. I guess you saw the report right after it came out. And why does it spell out that this shift is necessary, this detour or turnaround, as it's being called?
The California High-Speed Rail Authority is pretty clear that the Southern First segment simply would have been too expensive to build with the funding that they have in hand right now. And the Northern First, the San Jose to Valley line, the Valley to Valley line, as they like to call it, is going to be about $10 billion. So that doesn't make the Southern segment cheaper when we, you know, hopefully build it later on. But again, with the funding that they have in hand now, they felt that starting in Northern California was the best option.
Well, they're also saying, aren't they, that they're going to get probably more investment money as a result of doing this? Is that part of the what the Rail Authority is saying?
Yes, that's their hope. To bring on private investors, the idea is that you need a segment of the rail line fully completed, up and running, with ridership that you can bring to private investors and say, look how successful this project has been. Don't you want to put some of your private money on the table to help us see it through? And if they started in Southern California and weren't able to complete that entire first segment, they never would have been able to show or prove to private investors that they can actually move this project forward.
And we should mention that half the money comes from the state, half from the Fed, and about a third of it is supposed to be from private investment, which right now is in many minds questionable. But we'll get into that later on in the program. Let's talk with you, though, about the political landscape of this, because you've got Southern California lawmakers who are supportive of this whole project, largely because of job growth, and some are eager simply to ease up traffic, and they're not exactly happy that this is going to be, from their point, neglected. But the North and South political problems are also there, and it has to do with resistance from some of the Southern California communities.
Yes, that's right. The High-Speed Rail Authority is sort of between a rock and a hard place, no matter which direction they started, because Southern California lawmakers were, as you said, the construction jobs and the development and the ease of the, and now they have created a problem where Northern California lawmakers are, or some of them at least, are, you know, praising the new plan, and Southern California lawmakers are unhappy. But by returning the focus, I should say, to Northern California, that's going to open up another can of worms with folks who live on the peninsula and in the South Bay who don't want to see this train go through their backyards. So it's going to be, it could be a rocky road in Northern California as well.
Well, there's a rocky road any way you look at it. There's still a lot of outstanding lawsuits. There's really the concern about the length of time and the cost for acquiring the properties that are needed, and also getting clearance for the project environmentally.
Yes, there's a long list of potential hurdles. The lawsuits being first and foremost. There are several outstanding lawsuits, including one where a decision from a Sacramento Superior Court judge is expected a few months from now, potentially as soon as April, about whether the High-Speed Rail Authority has sufficiently complied with the Prop 1A requirements for trip time or ridership. And after that, there's a whole other list of lawsuits that remain, and each one of them really could stop the project in its tracks, depending how it goes. And of course, the High-Speed Rail Authority is hoping that it goes their way.
Is there also a funding plan for cap and trade in this? Isn't there about $10 billion?
Yes, that's right. The Rail Authority is expecting that they'll get, over the next several decades, up to $10 billion of trade money to help build the project. And right now, what the legislature has promised is a quarter of cap and trade money goes to the project, and you can't know precisely how much that will be depending on how many fees are collected each year. They're expecting at least $500 million each of the next many years up until 2050, I believe.
Again, Jessica Calafatti is politics and state government reporter with the San Jose Mercury News. And Carl Guardino is here with us in studio. He's president and CEO of the Silicon Valley Leadership Group, also a member of the California Transportation Commission. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. Well, the train to nowhere is going somewhere now, it's going up here to Northern California. Why should people be excited and happy about this?
Well, first, anyone who would even attempt to still use that phrase, the train to nowhere, is saying that San Jose, the 10th largest city in America, Silicon Valley, the epicenter of the Earth's innovation economy, and the Bay Area, one of the most important job-producing regions in the world, is nowhere. So let's dispel that myth right now. And why are we excited from a business perspective at the Silicon Valley Leadership Group? First, this is a confluence of commuter rail choices, rapid rail choices that are going to be focused right in San Jose and serving the Bay Area. So first, let's start with high-speed rail. That's 220 per mile per hour rail that is going to be going from the Central Valley to Silicon Valley into Diridon Station in downtown San Jose, with construction completed by 2024, service by 2025. Within the next 5 years, thanks to the effort of the Silicon Valley Leadership Group, our friends at the Bay Area Council and other places, we're going to have electrified Caltrain from that same station in downtown San Jose all the way to San Francisco, which, Michael, is not only better for the environment, less noisy, better in terms of greenhouse gas reductions, but it's going to be faster service, and it's going to allow us to double the ridership from 60,000 weekday passenger trips to 120,000 weekday passenger trips. Imagine how fewer cars we're going to have on 101, 280, 85, as well as surface streets when we are able to get another 60,000 weekday passenger trips out of their cars and onto Caltrain rail cars. And then third, 2025 is also when we will have the extension of BART right into downtown San Jose at this same station. So we're not only going to have rapid rail through high-speed rail serving the Central Valley and Northern California, but it's going to come platform-to-platform transfer with an electrified Caltrain commuter rail system and the very popular BART system serving Silicon Valley, the Bay Area, and beyond.
You're also going to be opening up jobs throughout the Central Valley. That's one of the big positives in this. But what about concern for the fact that the Caltrain section is going to be slower?
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right, Michael, about jobs. Let's not forget for a moment that the unemployment rate for construction workers in the Central Valley is above 30%, that the unemployment rate across industry clusters in our Central Valley of California is three times the unemployment rate in Silicon Valley and the Bay Area. This is going to help put people to work, in this case, tens of thousands of people, but it's going to help other people get to work. And we can't understand underscore the economic impact to having a smart blended rail transit system. Michael, your follow-up question was about the speed of Caltrain commuter rail service. It is not only time competitive with the automobile, but even one fender bender, and it's much stronger, and that's currently before electrification. So electrification will make it a little bit faster between San Jose all the way up to San Francisco, a lot cleaner, less noisy, and again, we'll be able to double the ridership capacity. And don't forget, Caltrain commuter rail passengers are what we call choice riders. Two out of three, Michael, own a car. They're leaving their car and getting onto a rail car. And if we double that to 120,000 weekday passenger trips, that's 80,000 less weekday passenger trips on 101, 280, 85 in our surface streets. And quite frankly, the combination of these three steps is a game changer for Bay Area commuters.
Are we still, though, just for the overall picture, still kind of up in the air as to where the authority is going to put the Bakersfield line and station?
The authority will continue to show us exactly where that Bakersfield line will go. But what's exciting about what they're already building, about 116 miles under construction, when you're talking about stations within key cities that are great cities with a fabulous history but have been hollowed out through the difficult recessionary times we've had, we have an opportunity for really smart land use patterns within existing cities for jobs and housing in those existing cities that merit a high-speed rail station. So this is good land use and transportation planning as well as smart transportation policy.
I was looking at an article by Stephen Greenhut that appeared in Bloomberg, and he said a rail project will take riders away from commercial airlines, which clearly it will, but also added the fact that I'm reading from his article here, some liberal critics fear that the train line will shift money from programs that help the poor to a system designed to serve the upper middle class.
Stephen Greenhut is such a respected writer, so I'm going to build on his first point first, and that is he's right. This will compete with airlines. Remember, if we were to try an option other than high-speed rail that depended on commercial air traffic, the amount of new airport runways we'd have to build and service, that's a minimum of 2 to 3 times more expensive than the high-speed rail option that we think is better. Second, we want market choice, and we do have a choice, but right now, it's not a very appealing choice. Where I live in Silicon Valley, to get to the airport, I have to arrive an hour beforehand into San Jose for my flight. The flight is an hour down to LAX. LAX is nowhere near downtown LA, so it's at least another hour to get there. Instead of that, I can be on a high-speed rail train in about 2 hours and 15 minutes from downtown San Jose to downtown Los Angeles. So it is not only time competitive with the airlines, it's better. In terms of programs for folks of different income levels, we are going to be able to serve through this line Californians who choose to take high-speed rail. And those choices, those economic choices each of us have to make, are going to link folks who need a place to live and can't afford high-cost Silicon Valley or the Bay Area because it shrinks the globe. I can buy a much more affordable for sale or rental home in Gilroy in South Santa Clara County, suddenly I'm a 15-minute high-speed rail trip away from downtown San Jose instead of an hour to an hour and a half drive, depending on traffic.
Again, Carl Guardino here with us in studios, president and CEO of the Silicon Valley Leadership Group and a member of the California Transportation Commission. I spoke earlier today with Assemblymember Jim Patterson. He's a Republican, represents District 23, and I asked him why he opposes the new high-speed rail business plan.
I think it's a tacit admission that the High-Speed Rail Authority simply cannot find the funds and come in on time or on budget going south, particularly since they are going through the Tehachapi Mountains and then having to drill tunnels and all of that. So I think it is a tacit admission that their fundamental plan just could not be built on time or on budget. But I think the bigger issue here is that this is not the high-speed rail plan that voters approved. It has changed so dramatically that many of us have been saying that the governor and the legislature needs to call for a revote on this. I think the authority is using powers granted to them by the legislature and also by the voters to actually try and build a system that will not be as fast. It won't get from point to point, L.A. to San Francisco, in the time it should be. It appears that the ticket pricing is going to be expensive, and there is no funding. In their plan, they already admit that they're going to have to find $3 billion of additional federal money just to make this this turn work. So for a whole lot of reasons, I think the people of California ought to be asked to either approve or not approve the plan and the spending and the design that this authority is building, because it is so different and so at odds with what the people approved in the bond election.
I do want to get into costs with you since you brought that up, but I believe you questioned a number of rail officials about these growing costs, especially tunneling through the mountains, and you asked about the shift in the route. And supposedly in the hearing, Chairman Dan Richard refused to answer these questions.
I think that is safe to say that they were less than forthcoming and less than direct. So I think I have two complaints here. One is that they knew that they had funding problems going south, and they knew that they were going to turn from going south from Central California to going north prior to the time that they came in front of the Oversight Hearing Committee and just simply would not be clear and direct about it. And I think that's been part of the problem all along as well. This is another change, another decision that is inexplicable unless you see it in terms of the difficulty that this authority has in building the system. So, and I think that although I was at one time one of the rather singular opponents for the reasons stated, that we're now seeing the San Jose Mercury News editorialize, the Oakland Tribune editorialize, and they're using terms, you know, like a fantasy land train and a boondoggle. We have reporting from the LA Times that has brought into question the secretiveness of how the authority does its business. We have reporting from Moody's and from Bloomberg about the disinterested private sector saying that it is such a flawed plan that they can't come to the table with lots of money. And you also have the big investment banks that are responding to Bloomberg reporting there is very little appetite to do any kind of debt underwriting. And so what we're left with is a project, the costs of which are exploding. The routes are changed, particularly, I think, the northern blending of the Caltrain and all of that slows down the point-to-point travel. And I think the whole question is, how do you build an entire system? It looks to me like, short of having money fall from the sky, the authority itself is saying that it just does not have a clear path of financing to finish this up.
And on the other hand,
my concern is it ends in Bakersfield and ends in San Jose, and that's the last we see of it.
No, but on the other hand, Assemblyman, the authority did say publicly that this would drop the overall price tag, it would save $4 billion, and it would attract new investors. They've been very public about that.
Yes, I'm going to be kind, but firm about this. I do not believe them for a minute. If you look at what they have suggested, they are reducing by $4 billion a route for that includes going into Southern California, drilling the tunnels, and that $64 billion has absolutely no concrete cost estimates about what that route south is going to cost. If you don't have in your business plan the concrete estimates, the numbers of what it's going to cost to drill the tunnels, to go the Tehachapi route, do all of those kinds of things, how do you call that a business plan that you can trust? And how can somebody like me, charged with being a member of the legislature with oversight responsibility of a project like this, how can I trust that it's going from 68 billion to 64 billion when the biggest section and the biggest potential for cost is not even estimated in the plan?
So let me go to the cut to the chase here. I mean, from your perspective, this is a shell game with a lot of cost run-ups and delays, and that's what it's been, and that's what it continues to be.
Yes, it continues to morph and change and move around because of the financing problems, because I think the authority is just trying to get some track down. And they have admitted that what they're doing here is to put some track down, quite frankly, so that they can show that they've done something. The big question here is how in the world do they get south into L.A., complete the San Francisco to L.A. route, and do it in the speed, the time, and the manner, and the cost that the voters allowed them the authority to do. That's why it needs to be revoted. And I think that leadership in the governor's office and frankly, in the legislature, the leadership would make that decision, because the people said yes to a project that this authority is building that has no resemblance to the project that the people approved.
Assemblyman Jim Patterson, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Again, that was Assemblymember Jim Patterson of Fresno, Republican Assembly member of the 23rd Assembly District. And coming up on a break here, but Carl Guardino, I'd like to hear a response from you. He's talking about secretiveness and boondoggle, but most of all, the money not being there, and put it back to the people to vote.
Well, where do I start to unpack that? First, let me start by saying that Jim Patterson is not only a gentleman but a friend, and boy, would democracy be boring if we always agreed. But let's also let facts stand where they are. Jim Patterson just said on the air that costs are exploding. In fact, the costs would be going down from an initial thought of over $100 billion, then a few years ago bringing that down to $68 billion, and in this plan down to $64 billion. So it's going in the opposite and rather positive direction than Jim just said. Second, he said the routes are changing. The routes aren't changing. The vision is the same, and it's a bold vision of high-speed rail in California from San Francisco to Los Angeles, Anaheim in phase one, and that is still the route. The only thing that's changed is for the second segment, where do you go first, to LA or San Jose? They're both incredible job centers, but you make a choice, and they're making a wise choice that saves money and time and gets the system started.
Carl, forgive me. I know you have a few more things to say, but I want to give opportunity to listeners to join this discussion, and let me do that now. Our toll-free number is available. We would like to hear from you about this new detour for high-speed rail to San Jose. If you have some thoughts about it, questions about it, you can join us now at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Feel free to join the program again at 866-733-6786 or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQEDForum. When we return, we'll hear from you. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about the California High-Speed Rail Authority now planning to build the first section of the new bullet train from the Central Valley to San Jose rather than what was called for in the initial plan, Fresno to Burbank. And the authority says the change will speed construction and save money. But rail supporters in Southern California are eager for the train to ease traffic and are upset that their region is neglected. And we're kind of fleshing this all out, and certainly going to bring you into the conversation as well. With us in studio is Carl Guardino. And he was responding to a conversation I had earlier with Assemblyman Jim Patterson, who is very strongly a critic, not only of the plan initially, but the new detour. And Carl, you're going to unpack a few other things.
Thank you. And again, about Assemblyman Jim Patterson, it's very appropriate that any member of the California legislature would continue to play its auditing function of any big expenditure project. So I compliment him for that. But again, details do matter. He mentioned that
this is going to be monitored, by the way, strongly monitored, this whole project ongoing?
We believe it should. From the private sector, these are our hard-earned taxpayer dollars, and we think that the legislature should play its role more in that regard, not only on a high-speed rail project, but any project in California. So no quibbling there.
Well, is there quibbling about the idea that this should go back to the voters? That's what the assemblyman was essentially advocating. And in fact, we're going to talk shortly with Aubrey Betancourt about a proposition that's in the works to reroute about $8 billion of this money to water storage projects throughout the state of California.
And to give Aubrey fairness, after she speaks, I would love to comment on what she and her group of agricultural interests are proposing that we find inappropriate, and I'll explain more about that later. But let's not forget, there's already 115 miles of construction happening between the current segment, between north of Bakersfield and north of Fresno. So this is already happening. In terms of concerns about the costs, that's always a legitimate concern for all of us. But the person on the High Speed Rail Authority Board, Mike Rossi, former chief risk officer of all of Bank of America, former vice chair of all of Bank of America, nobody sharpens a pencil like Mike Rossi, has brought in a level of discipline to the High Speed Rail Authority over the last few years, again, where we've seen the price go down from an estimated over $100 billion to $68 billion, with this new plan to $64 billion. And this is going to bring High Speed Rail not only to San Jose, Silicon Valley, and the Bay Area quicker and more efficiently, but for a lower cost as well.
Let me go back for just a moment to Jessica Calafatti, who's with us by phone, politics and state government reporter for the San Jose Mercury News. And the governor, of course, has been the biggest advocate of this whole rail project from the beginning. Jessica, we did invite Governor Brown. He was not available, but he's wanted, you know, pretty passionately to move ahead with this. And it even predated him, the project idea and so forth. But he says also, he said publicly, this is what the people of California want. Are we still at a state, do you think, where the people of California indeed want and support high-speed rail?
That's a tough question to answer. I know in addition to the assembly members' calls for, you know, another vote, like you mentioned, there's talk or, you know, action, really, to gather signatures for a ballot measure that would, in a way, give the people another chance to weigh in. And that ballot measure would use currently appropriated high-speed rail money for water projects. But really, it depends who you ask. I think the governor and proponents of the project, as you said, continue to believe that this is something that people want and also something that people need because of the problems that Carl was describing with congestion on the roadways and in the skies just continuing moving forward. And there needs to be some sort of solution. And the governor, I know, has said previously that he believes this is, in fact, the cheapest solution if the other options are building more highways or new runways for airplanes.
Well, there was a poll conducted by the Hoover Institution, and 53% essentially said that they would approve water, especially after the drought, and water storage, or just doing things to create better drinking water to high-speed rail. And I wanted to actually bring Aubrey Betancourt into this discussion. She is executive director of the California Water Alliance and is working to put a proposition measure on the November ballot to divert, as I said earlier, $8 billion from the rail project to water storage projects. And Aubrey Betancourt, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. And let's talk about what you want here. I mean, this is at this point would be to take money from high-speed rail, $8 billion, as I said, and put it into water storage projects throughout California. And that shifts priorities. It really is talking about shifting money not only, well, from water users to taxpayers, too, isn't it?
Well, these are pre-appropriated bond funds, but this is about priorities, and it's about having the opportunity to have policy reflect the priorities that we believe the public currently holds, as you just stated in that in that poll from Stanford University earlier this year. But more importantly, it's also about addressing the more immediate needs of our state long term as well. And so when we look at the abnormally warm winter we're functioning in now, that we may be in a few more years of a drought cycle, that they're now saying, we've seen many scientific reports saying drought cycles are going to become more common. We have an infrastructure in our water supply that's out of date by, 50, 60 years, and it's not adequate to meet the modern needs and modern supply requirements for our state. That includes environmental protection, manufacturing and domestic uses, as well as farm food production as well. I studied water management in Australia, and they went through a 10-year drought cycle, and it was through that they utilized and invested in every technology to get their water system to not only get them out of their drought cycle and take advantage of what little precipitation they were receiving throughout that cycle, but also to prepare themselves for the next cycle. And that's what we're offering with this initiative, is an opportunity for the voters to say, this is our priority right now, and that we need to invest in our greatest needs.
But you don't have any lawsuits at this point.
No.
But you've also got a diverse coalition of backers. Carl Guardino mentioned agriculture support. There's a lot of that, but also the construction industry.
Yeah, that we're receiving more and more support out of construction, out of property owners associations, out of manufacturing, those that are looking for, seeing our water supply reliability and safety and security of that reliable supply, get up to the standards that we need. And water is the number one priority in the state, equal with jobs in the economy. And this initiative provides the public the opportunity to have policy reflect that investment with their tax dollars.
And you're hoping it's on the November ballot.
That's the hope, yeah. It's a heavy lift. It's still a ballot initiative process. We're still out gathering signatures in order to qualify for November. So, this is the California, democratic system at play. This is how the initiative process works.
Aubrey Betancourt is executive director again of the California Water Alliance, working to put a proposition measure on the November ballot to divert some $8 billion from the rail project to water storage projects. And thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Let me bring some of our callers in. I know Carl Guardino wants to respond to Aubrey Betancourt, but I want to get to some of our callers, and let me do that first with you. John, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to ask, or point out, rather, that I don't hear any alternatives. So given the population density is growing in California, and there's a really clear pattern in Europe and in Asia of high density and transport working really well, it's curious to me what would happen if we just took this away. I mean, investment in infrastructure is probably the best way. If you look at the highway system, the Golden Gate Bridge, the Bay Bridge, I mean, where else is this going to happen? So hopefully somebody here can answer what the alternative is if we take this off the table.
Let me go to you, Jessica Calafatti. Alternative if it's off the table? Have you explored that or thought about
it? Well, that's sort of what I was discussing earlier.
Yeah.
The governor has been pretty clear on how much more expensive it would be to build more highways, build more runways, build new airports. And those plans aren't really on the table right now because the governor and others are so committed to high-speed rail as the path forward. But I would be frightened to think of what those costs might be if they're more than $64 billion.
Let me get another caller. Arthur, that's you. Morning.
Good morning. Important subject. Carl Guardino is arranging for BART to be built underground in a long 4 mile or more tunnel, and then continuing to duplicate Caltrain Santa Clara. I'm wondering where the funding is going to come from for the needed grade separations, especially in the mid-peninsula where they're adjacent to housing, and we need a covered trench. Where is that going to come from?
Carl Guardino.
Martin raises such a good point, and that's the future of Caltrain, which has served us since Abraham Lincoln was president 153 years ago when that started. And Martin, if the Silicon Valley leadership...
I think it's Arthur, by the way, we're talking to,
okay.
Just for the record.
Yeah. Oh, okay, Arthur, good to hear from you. And now I know who it is, too, a good man down in Palo Alto. If we move forward with our own local transportation funding measure in November, then we want to make the biggest investment in the future of Caltrain commuter rail service than any measure would have ever done, including what Arthur talked about grade separations to not only speed up traffic, but to make it more safe throughout the North County of Santa Clara County. A trench in Palo Alto, that's not really realistic. That's $1 billion all by itself. When the California station serves 1,700 weekday passenger trips and the university station covers about 7,000 weekday passenger trips. So $1 billion trench, no. Smart grade separations, absolutely yes.
Let me thank Arthur for the call. And let me get you to respond, Carl Guardino, to what we heard earlier from Aubrey Betancourt. California in terrible straits with water, $8 billion better served from the standpoint of many citizens with water storage and safe drinking water, especially in this drought, than putting money into high-speed rail.
If Aubrey and her backers, and it's so far that's $2 million in undisclosed contributors to gather signatures that I think we'd all like to see who's been making those contributions. We're talking about more money for water improvements in California. The Silicon Valley Leadership Group, as we've been in the past as an ally, would be front in that line as an ally. But robbing Peter to pay Paul, to try to take money that voters approve for something else and shift it, is not the right way to go. But it doesn't just shift money. It also shifts California water policy, and it puts the shift of who pays for water onto from users onto taxpayers. And that might work well for our incredibly important agriculture industry, but it's not really fair to the citizens of California.
Let me go to a tweet here from Ben, who says, high-speed rail to Bakersfield is too costly for the commuting lower and middle class. Who is it for? Use the money for local and regional projects instead.
And the challenge is, Ben's point, where there is so much merit to it, is we have underinvested in transportation of all types in California for the past several decades. That's why so many of us do local ballot measures for local needs with local accountability. But the argument that we shouldn't do this because we also have other needs, let's be honest, we need to grow the pie rather than fight over the crumbs. But the high-speed rail mission is to build out this line from San Francisco to Los Angeles and Anaheim. This is segment two. It's a smart segment that is going to connect the Central Valley with Silicon Valley, the Bay Area, and beyond. The ridership potential is strong. The ability to deliver this in less than a decade to tie into an electrified Caltrain and BART service around the Bay is going to be a game changer, both for our economy and commutes, both in the Central Valley as well as in Silicon Valley. Remember, this gets people from Fresno to downtown San Jose in 60 minutes, from Merced to downtown San Jose in 45, from Gilroy to San Jose in 15. What we can do around transportation, housing, and land use within built city environments is truly historic, and we should be moving forward.
Well, since a number of listeners have been bringing up cost and class here, Jessica Calafatti, what about the cost of a ticket?
That's a good question. I am not familiar with, and I don't think the High Speed Rail Authority has yet shared precisely how much tickets would cost for this new Northern California First line.
Do you know, Carl, what the cost would be?
Overall, we need to keep these ticket prices below the price of a flight when we're talking about the entire gap. But when you look at the cost of travel in California, remember that the question that John asked earlier about highways and runways as an alternative to high-speed rail, that's 2 to 3 times more money for taxpayers and users of our system, not to mention the greenhouse gas emission issues around that or the CEQA lawsuits that are involved with any major highway or airport expansion project. We have to look at the total cost, and the ticket is key. We have to keep the ticket price lower than the airplane price, and I truly believe that is what the High Speed Rail Authority has said in public as well as in private. That's been the goal, and that has to be the reality.
And again, Carl Guardino is president and CEO of the Silicon Valley Leadership Group, and Shelley from San Jose is our next caller. Shelley, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I'm Shelley Leiser, and I'm a community leader with PACT, People Acting in Community Together. And I think that the idea of having the next segment be from Bakersfield to San Jose is a real win-win. For one thing, there's such a lack of affordable housing in San Jose. and people from Bakersfield and beyond, they could come and have jobs here and, say, work in our, say, in stores like Subway, but then they could go back to affordable housing. Now, for that reason, I think the cost of the tickets needs to be kept down, and I think it would be smart to do as they do on the Caltrain, charge half price for seniors and the disabled, and for people of low income, if they could get, you know, cheaper tickets. But anyway, it would do so much, and if, of course, it would be convenient for me too, but that's not what basically why I'm for it. It would also, you know, it would mean there would be more affordable housing because people would have access to areas that are farther away from housing. So I just think it would be a real win-win.
All right. Shelley, thank you for that. We'll let that stand. We'll get another caller on here from Palo Alto. John, that's you. Welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you, Michael. I lived in Boston for a number of years and lived through the big dig out there, which was initially slated to cost $3 billion and I think ballooned up to $15 billion. And on the other hand, it was a transformative project. It really made a difference for the regional economy and the transportation system there. So I have two questions. They're kind of interrelated. One is, being a relative newcomer to California, it would seem to me that if you wanted to get a lot of bang for your buck, it would make more sense to build lines between Sacramento and San Jose and also San Diego and Los Angeles to start, get some ridership, get some traction with the population, and then fill the gap in between L.A. and San Jose. And the second related question is just from a logistics perspective, and this is not because I have an axe to grind about running a line up through the peninsula, but wouldn't it be much cheaper to run a your high-speed line up on the East Bay, on the Oakland side, where probably, you know, getting additional land would be significantly less expensive, and then run a spur over, maybe using an existing BART underground tunnel or something like that for the cars that need to come over into the city of San Francisco.
John, thank you for those options as you envision them. Jessica Califatti, they've kind of come up before in different fashion, haven't they?
Yes, that's right. Extending the high-speed rail line to San Diego and to Sacramento are what the High-Speed Rail Authority calls Phase 2. So there isn't much information right now about what Phase 2 might cost or when Phase 2 might ever be completed. And certainly, as we've talked about already, there's enough hurdles to completing Phase 1. So they'll get to Phase 2 eventually. And to the caller's other question, I have never heard anyone discuss the possibility of running the high-speed rail line down the East Bay. I'm not sure why they chose the peninsula initially. Maybe Carl has more information on that.
They actually did consider the East Bay in the early days, and they voted to go the peninsula route instead of the East Bay route so that they could tie in major employment centers, both in Silicon Valley, San Jose, the peninsula, and on to San Francisco.
I remember that was really the reasoning. And as I said, we saw it burgeoning at one time. I mean, there have been a lot of alternative plans here, but this one is moving forward, and now there's a detour on it. And by the way, if you have something you want to say about that detour, which is really at the heart of our discussion, you can join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, in the time remaining, or email us forum@kqed.org. Here's a comment from Roger, who actually lives in Los Angeles and San Francisco and commutes back and forth, and he writes, something that gets lost here, the train system is not stopping in San Jose. High-speed rail trains run on standard gauge track, so when a train from the Central Valley gets to San Jose, it continues on Caltrain's right of way into San Francisco under this plan. Yes, it has to slow north of San Jose, but we're talking about slowing from 220 miles per hour to 125. Once Caltrain is electrified, it's important to keep this in mind. The project is from the Central Valley to San Jose, but the trains will run to San Francisco. Jessica Califatti?
Yes, new details in the business plan about the High Speed Rail Authority's interest in securing some federal money to complete that San Jose to San Francisco segment of the line. But the caller is, or the commenter rather, is correct that the high-speed rail trains would be sharing track with Caltrain on the San Jose to San Francisco leg of the trip.
Yeah.
And they would be going much slower through the peninsula.
Cara Gordino?
There's an old expression about being mostly correct, and that is mostly correct, because where high-speed rail will stop from San Jose to San Francisco is much less frequent than where Caltrain stops. So if you are jumping off in downtown San Jose to jump on Caltrain, it would be because you want to be able to access many more of the stops along the Caltrain system.
Let me go to more of your comments. Here's Tony, who writes, in 2011, the city of San Jose developed a guidelines for high-speed rail in San Jose, and the plan analyzed the routes through the San Jose neighborhoods, then made specific proposals about the look, feel, and services it dared to run, and ways to minimize impacts to communities. How much of the guidelines are included in the current plans? Can I go to you again, Jessica Calafatti?
That's a really good question and something that we're going to be looking at much more closely in the weeks ahead. But the short answer is the plan doesn't provide too much explicit detail about routes and alignments and precisely where the line would go. And those details will come, and we'll be looking at the plans very closely.
All right. I'm looking at another comment here from Kathleen, especially after hearing Aubrey Betancourt from the California Water Alliance. She says, for God's sakes, you mean Californians have to choose between clean water and a decent high-speed train? It's time for both. We'll let that comment stand. And let me go to another comment from Jack, who says, please someone explain the cost benefits of building high-speed rail for the sake of vacationers or a small number of rich commuters who will fly anyway, versus expanding the well-used BART system or the L.A. Metro. Frankly, the timing of the high-speed rail was right at the height of a recession, and as such, I really think Californians wound up grasping for the wrong thing simply because there was nothing else there. Carol Gordino.
That's an interesting comment, because it's a lot harder to pass this type of a measure during a recession when people are even more sensitive to their pocketbooks. So I would argue just the opposite, that if it had been during one of our boom times, the vote would have even been higher. That's what we found after running 5 successful transportation sales tax measures in Silicon Valley over the last 3 decades. Your chances are much better when people are feeling good about their personal economy. Not just the overall economy.
What do you say to the critics, though? I mean, we heard from Assemblyman Patterson and Andy Vidak, who's another Republican in the Assembly, says that this system is the whole design is fatally flawed. There's no private funding right now. There's rampant waste and cost escalations.
Thank you. Let's try to hit on all three of those. First, cost escalation we've already addressed. The numbers were as high as $109 billion. That came down to $68 billion, and now it's $64 billion, and those are serious numbers by serious leaders with strong private sector experience and great integrity. So it's going down, not up. The second is that it's please, there were 2 other points, Michael.
Yeah, I was just quoting Andy Vidak on this. He was also talking about the fact that there is no private funding and that there's been rampant waste.
So rampant waste, I just disagree with. And Senator Vidak, who's a fine man, would have to give examples so that we could actually address each of those examples. And the third point, I'm sorry.
I was trying to write it. Yeah, no, that's okay. He was saying not only no private funding, but fatally flawed.
Yeah, and
the design is fatally flawed.
Okay, so no private funding. Again, we already know this from high-speed rail examples around the world. When you have an operating segment, and that will be 2025 into San Jose, when you have an operating segment, then that's when private sector dollars flow. And if we waited every time for every dollar of every major infrastructure improvement in California, we would have zero, none, butt kiss, nada of anything of any magnitude. The same could be said for the critics who tried to stop us from passing bringing BART to downtown San Jose and on to Santa Clara, that we didn't have state and federal funds. Well, our local voters saw otherwise by more than a 2/3 vote. That went forward. Once we passed it, we attracted $750 million in state funds, $900 million in federal funds, and the project is $75 million under under budget and a year ahead of schedule. So we can always say, when critics say not every single T is crossed and I is dotted, don't do anything, we wouldn't accomplish anything.
Do you think if there was another ballot measure to redirect voter-approved dollars like the one we're hearing from, we heard about from Aubrey Betancourt, that the voters would still be behind high-speed rail?
Yeah. First of all, on the water issue, if Aubrey and her team were coming forward and saying, let's do something on water, we'd be on board and jumping in the water with her. When she's saying, let's divert funds, I agree with Kathleen, who said, why are we pitting water versus high-speed rail? We need to do both in California. So let's move forward with this bold and visionary plan laid out by the governor, but started by a previous governor, and build this line, because the transportation needs in this state are great, and this is one of those puzzle pieces towards a more robust 21st century transportation system.
Well, there is a link to the plan on our website, kqed.org. Let me just quickly end up with you, Jessica Calafatti. 60 days of public comment, and then what's the timeline?
So after that, the plan is presented to the legislature, and the High Speed Rail Authority moves forward. One other point I wanted to make about the cost of the tickets, though, that's come up several times. And while the High Speed Rail Authority hasn't been clear on precisely what those ticket prices might be, it's in the High Speed Rail Authority's best interest to make those ticket prices affordable, because if they don't have people riding this train or able to afford a ride on the train, they're never going to be able to get the ridership numbers they need to bring the private investors on board.
Yeah, so good point. Well, we'll leave it there. Thank you, Jessica Calafatti from the San Jose Mercury News. Thanks also to Carl Guardino, who is with us in studio from the Silicon Valley Leadership Group. And we spoke also with Aubrey Betancourt of the California Water Alliance and Assemblyman Jim Patterson. And you can also go on with this conversation online by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, as well as access the report, which is there on the website as well. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Gucci, Tina Larberg. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. And for all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.